It's time for overtime.
Stop what you're doing and listen.
In the world of sports, it's all about the playmakers in today's headlines, from locals to the pros, with interviews from local standouts and sports all-stars across the country that will have you talking.
He'll shoot, and he hits it at the buzzer.
Hear from coaches to players, sports analysts, and broadcasters who are a part of the action every day. Overtime, now with Burt Ramin on ESPN 102.3 AM 1000 KSOO, Sioux Falls sports leader.
It's the top of hour number two on a leading off show today, Monday, February 9th edition of Overtime. Congratulations to our winners for the four quarters of Burt's boxes. Cade S, like Sam, won twice. He won the first quarter and the third. Greg D, we did hear from Greg moments ago, was the winner at halftime. And Haley H, if you're out there, give us a call during a break or immediately after today's show, right at 1 o'clock, and we'll be in studio fielding the calls, getting the details hammered out of those prize packs, details you need to know. And also, if you're a winner of some merch with us here, a swag pack, a t-shirt, want to get the right size for you and yours as well. Thank you to everybody that played, called, chipped in, chimed in to make Burt's Boxes pretty darn fun this year once again. Super Bowl 60 is behind us, which means we now face the offseason, the drag of the offseason. The good news is 1 month from today is when free agency starts. It's called the legal tampering period. Nothing is concrete, but everything is out there. We'll start getting all the updates about Romeo Doubs to Miami, Malik Willis to Miami, and many other players on the move 1 month from today. So all is not lost. We'll keep you company throughout the offseason. We got free agency opening up in a month. The NFL draft about, I don't know what that is, 3 months away. The late April in Pittsburgh, less than 3 months now, the 23rd through the 25th. A lot to dive into, but let's look back at the big game yesterday. Hope you enjoyed it, because that was a pretty darn good football game. Was it the most exciting? Was it high-flying? Was it amazing? No. Was it the worst Super Bowl? Heck no, it wasn't either. Tremendous performance for Seattle. The defense, the torch carrier last night. Darnold did enough. He did not make a mistake in the game. And that was enough for Seattle to win it 29-13 over New England. All told, it is the second title for the Seattle Seahawks in their history. Here's head coach Mike McDonald on his quarterback.
I was just spending more time with Sam on all these interviews. It's like, Sam doesn't care about the obstacle. Like, you, like, everyone's made a narrative, this guy, of, like, everyone is, they have tried to put a story and a label on who he is as a person, who he is as a quarterback. He does not care. Okay. He just is the same guy every day since he shows up. He's so steadfast. He's a great teammate. His teammates love him. All he's done since he's walked in the door has just been a tremendous player on our football team and a tremendous leader who is the same guy every day. And that's who he is. And that's how we need to talk about him moving forward.
And that's Mike McDonald talking about his quarterback. Sam Darnold was not the game's MVP. That was Kenneth Walker III. Walker, the running back, a free agent to be, was a big-time benefactor from how things went last night. Not only was he the MVP, was the first running back to run for 100 yards in the Super Bowl in quite some time, and also made himself a lot of money. Whether it's with Seattle, if they retain him, his value is up, or anybody else that saw last night saw that guy weave in and out of tacklers, make people miss, go for the extra yard. Kenneth Walker, a special back, and he'll be a free agent coming up next month. I would say likely back with Seattle. They've got the money to keep him, but they have other priorities and players as well to make decisions on in the months ahead. Let's talk about the head coach, Mike McDonald, a little more. Here's ESPN's Ben Solak on how McDonald might just change the coaching trajectory league-wide.
Seattle's defense has the depth and has the coaching to fit to everybody, right? Mike McDonald, first and foremost, is the Sean McVay, Kyle Shanahan answer. We've been looking for that for about 8-9 years, right? When they first took over as head coaches, we thought, oh, Brandon Staley, oh, Vic Fangio, the too high defense. And that was there for a moment, but we needed a defense that was better at stopping the run out of too high, that had a better defensive front and ability to play all of those gaps. And then we needed a defense that was even stronger in zone coverage and the ability to match five guys over three guys and relate to all these route concepts. They are unbelievably, preposterously well coached. It feels absolutely like it felt watching that first dawn of McVay and Shanahan back in 2017, 2018.
Certainly feels like a changing of the guard, because I think we witnessed that last night. I'm not saying Seattle's a perennial power. Calm down. I am saying, though, we just saw a defensive-minded head coach in year number two with castaways and castoffs mixed with tremendous draft classes rolled up into one and some trade acquisitions. Go to the big game, dominate the big game. So certainly could be an inflection point that will change the NFL for years to come. On the other side, Drake May, obviously a disappointing performance, disappointing postseason statistically on the whole for May. What's next in his young career? Here's ESPN's Ryan Clark.
Drake May behaved after the game like you're supposed to. He cried. He talked about his coach and the relationship they want to have going forward. He talked about the way that the men in that locker room approach playing the game of football. It wasn't about fame. It wasn't about money. It was about winning. And here's what I want to say to him. I get it. You're not entitled to ever get back to this position. Not this team. Not Drake May as a player. You don't know if you ever reach these heights. Yeah, you got to feel this loss, but you also got to go figure out why it happened. You got to figure out how are we better. You have to know that you have a different schedule next year. You have to know that you have the bullseye on your back next year. There is no creeping up for Drake May.
All right, for sustainability purposes and talks here, everybody wants to say, yes, Seattle will be back. They're a really good team. They got buku bucks of cap space, which is a fact. Seattle is the fifth most cap space in the NFL with $74 million. And on the whole, they got about $120 million more in space than the Minnesota Vikings do today. That'll change. Obviously, Minnesota has to duck under the cap number. They're $40 million over right now. Using them as an example, not picking on them. Yes, I am. But Seattle has some serious staying power. How sustainable is it? Here's Damian Woody.
It's very sustainable, CC, because their defense, they're going to play a brand of football, a style of football. I call it all weather. You can take it to a dome. You can take it outside. You can take it to the heat. You can take it to the cold. You can take it to a Super Bowl. It doesn't matter. That style of football, that brand of football is sustainable. Obviously, there's a lot of variables that goes into these type of things. You know, you got to bring back some of your own guys. You got to bring in other pieces, draft. You got to have a little luck. You got to be healthy. But all things considered, that brand that Mike McDaniel has up in Seattle, it's going to be a problem for years to come.
Going to be a problem for years to come, indeed. On the other side, let's talk a little bit more about that Seahawk defense. What makes it so special? Here's a guy who stared down plenty of defenses in his time in the league, Dan Orlovsky, talking about the suffocating Seahawk defense.
This was almost like watching the walls close in. There was just nothing that you can do. It was the suffocating element. And I think what happened with Josh McDaniels in New England was, instead of, Josh is one of the great sequencers in the NFL. He calls this play to set up this play, this play to set up this play. So he's always on the attack. Immediately he got on the defensive. It was this very defensive style of play calling. It was very this careful style of play calling. And part of me understands it. We were talking about it. Going into the game, margin of error for New England is small. Can our defense create a turnover for a short field like they did against Denver in the AFC
special
title
teams
game?
Touchdown.
Yeah, that was going to be their way for win. Yeah, and I think what happened was Drake started to get hit early on, pressured early on, and then Drake started to hesitate. He started to play slow. He started to see things that weren't there. And then this defense then became hyenas.
The hyenas were out in full force last night. Seattle 29, New England 13 in Super Bowl 60. Lastly, back-to-back for Seattle. Could it happen? Michelle Smallman says, yes, it could.
I absolutely think Seattle has what it takes to go back-to-back. They have a defense that is so nasty. I know that they are going to have turnover at the offensive coordinator position with Clint Kubiak going to the Vegas Raiders, but we have seen the emergence and the excellence of Mike McDonald. We believe in Sam Darnold in a different way. They still have so many great pieces on the offensive and defensive side of the ball. And now they have that championship DNA. Now they have that confidence in one another. They already had that connectivity throughout the season, but now they have the proof of concept that they know what it takes to win. You think the Seahawks team is going to come in next season afraid of anybody? Not that they were this year, but they're going to have that attitude, that different swagger about themselves. If I had to pick one of these two teams, it's Seattle by a long shot.
Seattle by a long shot. I don't think anybody's going to argue with that. The AFC is a little bit weaker these days. You talk about the Packers, the Lions, those Bears, a lot of other teams. The Eagles are really darn good. The Niners aren't going anywhere fast. Seattle, the Rams, the NFC is stacked, and Seattle appears to be the class of the conference for now. And the AFC, it remains pretty wide open. New England will be a player for years and years to come. Buffalo back in the mix. You assume Kansas City will be back in the mix. Jacksonville is going to be a big player in the AFC for years and years, or at least it appears to be that way. Baltimore, Pittsburgh, they're going to be there. Denver, of course. We'll see, but I do side with Michelle Smallman saying that, yes, I do believe that Seattle will have some serious staying power. Now, for teams that might feel a little bit upset about last night, the Detroit Lions, the Buffalo Bills, the Lions facing a big, important season next year. Here's Marcus Spears.
The one team I will have my eye on a serious note is the Detroit Lions.
Okay.
Because either they are still a part of this conversation, yeah, and they rebound from last year, or we may have to start talking. Remember the hype about them two years ago?
Yeah, yeah.
It was the Lions' time. That's what we were all told. And right now you get teams like the Vikings, like the Packers, like the Bears that finish better than Detroit. But I do think Detroit seriously has a nice chance to rebound and win the division next year. But I do think that window getting a little smaller with the aging of that roster. And we'll dive into the latest odds for next year's Super Bowl, Super Bowl 61. We'll dive into those odds before you know it. Finishing up the scorecard, NBA basketball. The Knicks beat Boston yesterday, 111-89. And the Clippers beat Minnesota in Minneapolis, 115-96. Tonight, T-Wolves back at work. They're going to be home to Atlanta at 7 o'clock. Men's basketball, USD beat the Jackrabbits in Brookings on Saturday, 68-67. USF falls at St. Cloud, 102-65. And Augie keeps on chugging with another win, 62-54 at Winona. Viking men's basketball, 16-7 and 14-4 in NSIC play. Yesterday in men's basketball, Maryland beat Minnesota in Minneapolis, 67-62. Iowa fends off Northwestern, 76-70. And tonight, no area teams in action, but we will see three ranked teams in action. We'll see 24th rated Louisville home to NC State at 6 o'clock on ESPN. That'll be followed at 8 o'clock by Arizona, top rated team in the country, visiting 11th ranked Kansas, 8 o'clock on ESPN. Women's basketball over the weekend. Jackrabbit women were off. USD Coyote women kept on winning, a 74-69 effort against Oral Roberts. They're now 19-6, 9-2 in conference. NDSU refuses to get caught in the standings with another lopsided win. They double up Omaha on Saturday, 102-51. The Bison unblemished, unbeaten in conference at 11-0. USF lost to St. Cloud 72-56 on Saturday, and Augie drops at Winona 82-49. Yesterday, one final worth noting, Minnesota wins at Rutgers 63-52. And tonight, two ranked on ranked matchups, Kentucky at Texas, 6:30 on the SEC network, Oklahoma at Vandy, 8 o'clock on ESPN2. And a reminder, Augie hockey got swept over the weekend. That's rare this year. They lose both games to Michigan Tech. New record is 18-9-3, and they'll be home to Bowling Green. Final regular season home slate of the year. Will be home to Bowling Green Friday at 7, Saturday at 6 o'clock in the evening. Well, the big news to get to from down in Vermilion that broke on Friday after the show is that after one season as the head football coach and 7 years on staff at USD, Travis Johansson departed as head football coach to take a defensive coordinator role at Rutgers University out of the Big Ten. Athletic Director John Schemmel made that announcement on Friday and also made the announcement that they already have their new leading man. Matt Fitzum has been named the 32nd head coach in Coyote football history. In 2 years at USD, Batum has reached at least the quarterfinals with the program. His first season on staff with Bob Nielsen, Yoach reached the semis of the FCS playoffs for the first time in program history. And in his second year this past season, saw the Yoach make it back to the quarterfinals with him on staff. Schemmel saying in a statement, "I'm thrilled to have Matt be the next leader of our Coyote football program. He's a proven leader, a player's coach, and has been a critical part of our growth and success over the past couple of years." Fitzhugh completed his second season on staff last year, serving as the co-offensive coordinator and quarterback's coach. As the QB's coach, worked directly with one of the best Coyote quarterbacks in program history. You may have heard of Aiden Bauman. Also this past year, he helped lead the Coyote offense on the play-calling front. So this is an interesting hire in terms of the difference from last year. Bob Nielsen retires. He hands it over, hands the torch to Travis Johansson, a defensive coach. That's the hallmark of Coach Johansson. He's going to be a DC out there in Piscataway, New Jersey for Rutgers. Now you go offensive coach here, and it's an interesting transition for USD for sure, and very excited to meet the head coach, have him on the show all throughout next season, have him on the show soon so we can test his wits and put him in the hot seat and have some fun with Coach Batum before we know it. Full details on that transition at GoYotes.com. And congratulations to Coach Batum. And thanks for the work and all the time Travis Johansson gave us this past season. Well, somehow, some way, we got bigger FCS news than that that impacted us here in the Dakotas over the weekend. FCS powerhouse, NDSU, the Bison, have finalized an agreement to join the Mountain West Conference. We talked about this for years and years and years. Every year, will this be the time the Jackrabbits make the jump, the Bison make the jump, the Grizz and the Bobcats are invited somewhere, to the MAC, to the Mountain West, to somewhere. And finally, the call is made, the interest is reciprocated for NDSU and the conference, the Mountain West reaching out, and the Bison will join, worth noting, as football-only members this season. So, yes, this is late in the cycle. Schedules are not out yet in terms of the who's, the what's, the when's, the where's, and the why's. And I think this is going to be interesting to see what is retained on the Bison schedule, what changes are coming down the pike, and hopefully, you would imagine, I hope, that the Dakota Marker is going nowhere. I don't care about the line of demarcation between the FCS and the FBS, and I don't think the Jacks do. I don't think the Bison do. They just want to play for that quartzite stone, the Dakota Marker that we love so much each and every year. I hope that rivalry stays, and I hope eventually, and this might not be popular for you Jackrabbit fans out there, I hope eventually the Jacks get this opportunity. And maybe it's this offseason. Maybe it's in the works now. Speculation. Maybe it's next year. 2-year plan, 3-year plan, 5-year plan for the Jackrabbits. But when you are so darn good for so darn long in your sport, if there is room for upward mobility in the FCS, there is. Get to the group of 5, group of 6 now. And then from there, if you're a really darn good group of 5, group of 6 team, we know you can get drafted or plucked into a Power 4 conference. But when there's upward mobility, you should take that as flattery, and you should take that as, hey, what it is, face value, an opportunity for promotion. And it's not promotion in the sense of the Bison are going to go win a national title. That is an absurdly unlikely scenario here. But what is it positively? What are the positive things that come from this? Money, dollars, growth, brand recognition, enrollment boost, architecture, infrastructure boost. I can tell you honestly, we're going to talk about this all week, and I just got him booked. Kevin Marshall of FCS Nation Radio will join us on Friday. He's been through it with universities he's close to, and I saw a transition like this in person when I was on campus as a college student, not an athlete, far from an athlete in Boone, North Carolina. Appalachian State had won 3 titles in 4 years. We were the cream of the crop. We were the NDSU. We were the Jackrabbits. We were the Grizzlies. And we were living at the top, and there was some interest in moving up Appalachian State, little Appalachian State that beat Michigan that one time. And a lot of people said, yeah, this is great, but what about these rivalries? What about the battle for the old mountain jug with Western Carolina? What about the hatred with Furman or with the Citadel or those regionality rivals, the rivals that come into play and you can't stand to even look at their fans. I miss those times. I really do. And there's not a whole lot of rivalry that has been etched out with App just yet with the new guys in that Sun Belt. But there is Georgia Southern, made the move in conjunction with App, so that's good. Don't like them, and that's good too. But I will say this. In terms of that transition, the ball will keep rolling. And the school will get bigger. And the roads will get bigger. The enrollment is up. The visibility is up. Bowl games are super fun for schools of that size. No doubt about it. And I'm going to say honestly here, I'm curious to see what comes about with the Fargo Dome. Expansion? A new stadium? What is the decree there from the Mountain West? Or is it good enough right now? We'll see. I can speak honestly about App's situation back in the day, 2014-ish, to where their stadium, when I arrived on the campus as a 17-year-old, their situation in stadium-wise was 18, 22, 23,000. Right now, Kid Brewer Stadium in Boone is about 43, 44,000. They have blown it up and built it and retained it and kept it similar, but bigger and more beautiful. And the campus has flourished and thrived and gotten bigger. So, yes, there are some negatives here. Will Appalachian State ever make a CFP? I don't know. Will they ever win a CFP? No. Very likely they will not. But there are a lot of positives here, too. And the Bison are officially making the jump. They're expected to pay a total of $17 million to do so, $12 million to join the conference, $5 million to the NCAA to make the move. And people say that's a lot of money. No, it's not. Those are drops in the bucket, pennies across college football these days. And the Bison now become a bigger, uglier, nastier, meaner version of themselves in terms of recruiting and the war path. Because if you were a kid that is a two-star, three-star, we know those don't mean anything, but if you're that caliber athlete in the eyes of many, and you have an opportunity to go to Nebraska and they say, we really like you. You can come here and compete for a back-end roster spot. We'll build you up. Or you can go to a fellow FBS school up in Fargo that produces pretty darn good NFL talent and start. That's pretty interesting. FBS, FBS. Nebraska, Power Four. Opportunity maybe on the roster. We'll see. The Bison, group of six. Opportunity there, and a lot more of that coming. We'll see about where it all goes, and excited to talk about that and break it down as we figure out about the schedule, the implications, what the financials look like, and what the infrastructure change will be up there in Fargo, on campus, off campus, citywide, and what this can bring and transform Fargo into in terms of a football destination. This is a big move, and the time is now for Fargo and NDSU to make that move. Other news to dive into in your ReliaBank headlines of the day. For just the second time this century, the South Dakota basketball team won in Brookings on Saturday, 68-67. Yotes felt right at home from the jump, put together a tremendous first half, 43-32 the lead. The Jackrabbits stormed out, putting together a 19-2 run to pull ahead by six. Yotes do just enough down the stretch. Couple big moments, especially on the defensive side. They win in Brookings 68-67. That was a big one on Saturday. And lastly here, finishing up your headlines of the day. We did touch on this a bit, but ESPN.com is the story as well. That Rutgers came calling and they are hiring South Dakota head coach Travis Johansson. Johansson informed his team in a meeting on Friday that he's leaving for Rutgers, a veteran defensive coordinator, including leading a highly regarded defense back in 2024 at USD before his eventual promotion as head coach. He'll replace Rob Smith, who came in as DC this year and finished number 118 in team defense. Johansson's 14-year track record as a DC includes impressive stints at USD and Grandview University. Latest on that news, ESPN.com, GoYotes.com as well. When we come back, all the NFL news you can handle on the final day in season, a wrap-up of the 2025 NFL season and Super Bowl 60. What's next? A look at the odds. Who's overvalued? Who is undervalued heading into next year? That's coming up next on this Monday, February 9th edition of Overtime.
college hoops and NBA basketball, the NFL and Major League Baseball. It's all here on ESPN 102.3 and AM 1000 KSOO, Sioux Falls Sports Leader.
Right back with you on this Monday, February 9th edition of Overtime. Jam-packed hour number one. USD Coyote head men's basketball coach Eric Peterson joined us to talk about a winning week for his team, which included a big one up in Brookings as they continue their stretch run. USD looking good, feeling good, playing good. 14-12, 6-5 the record in conference, and they're currently in the fourth spot in the Summit League. Right now, let's talk NFL football currently on this Monday edition of the show. The best team in the NFL spent the season hiding in plain sight, led by the defense and special teams, armed with improved quarterback play. Nobody believed in Sam Darnold, and run by a 38-year-old second-year coach whose personality remains opaque to almost everyone outside of his building. The Seahawks kept their heads down and kept working. Loose and focused was the mantra that Coach Mike McDonald established for the Seahawks, and they lived right up to those words last night. According to ESPN.com, "We love each other," said appropriately named Seahawks safety Julian Love, who had one of the two fourth-quarter interceptions of Patriots quarterback Drake May that ultimately sealed the win. Lopsided, 29-13 the final. Byron Murphy, who had seven sacks in the regular season, had two last night, and the others came from unlikely spots. Derek Hall matched his regular season sack total with two. Fifth-round rookie Riley Mills, who played in only four regular season games, had one. And the other one went to cornerback Devin Witherspoon, who was asked to blitz a ton yesterday, and that was a big difference in the game. That Seahawks defense for real, and they might be here to stay for quite some time. The Seahawks won last night's Super Bowl after entering the season as plus 6,000 long shots. They'll enter the next season favored to win Super Bowl 61, but their relatively long odds suggest the field is unprecedentedly even and wide open again. Seattle is tied with the LA Rams at plus 950 to win next year's NFL championship, followed by the Bills plus 1100, the Eagles and Ravens, and AFC champion New England tied at plus 1,300. If they hold on to the beginning of the season, the Seahawks and Rams odd would be the longest preseason favorite on record since at least 1977, according to ESPN Research and SportsOddsHistory.com. The longer odds at the top means there's more balance in the middle. Other teams, Detroit, Green Bay, and the Chargers, are just some of the perennial contenders at plus 2,800 or shorter. They're joined by Kansas City and Denver. Going to be a fun season ahead. And an unpredictable one. You think you know who's going to win? You have a strong feeling on it? I would venture a guess you're probably wrong, because there are a lot of teams that could win it next year. The NFL is as healthy as ever. It is stretched as wide as ever. And there are 15, 20 teams that you could talk about and say candidly, yeah, that team looks pretty good. I like that team. They could go on a run. Absolutely. And that is great for the sport we all know and love. Other news to get to, Clint Kubiak's final game with the Seahawks was a Super Bowl win. That's official. Seahawks offensive coordinator confirmed on NFL Network last night following the win over the Patriots that he will indeed be departing Seattle to take over as the head coach of the Las Vegas Raiders. You guys know I'm going to Las Vegas. I'm fired up about it. Asked again if he was going, Kubiak added, "Hell yeah, I'm going." Although the Raiders have yet to confirm the hire, that would be awkward if this didn't work out, the news was widely expected. ESPN's Adam Schefter reported last week that Kubiak was expected to be named the head coach, but a deal couldn't be finalized until after the Super Bowl since the Seahawks were still playing. Kubiak is the son of former Broncos coach Gary Kubiak, and he'll be the Raiders' fifth full-time coach since 2021. Not good, but a good hire. Coming off at the top here, why not take a swing? Premier assistance at a team that just got it done. Maybe the right guy for the job, and we will see. But he might not be working with Max Crosby. This is interesting. Semi-depressing news if you're a Raider fan. Pro Football Talk on the news that last week, Jay Glazer of Fox made it clear that Raiders defensive end Max Crosby is done with the team. When PFT ran what Glazer said by somebody with knowledge of Crosby's thinking, the answer was, draw your own conclusions. an unnamed general manager saying he told Tom Brady he will never play for the Raiders again. That's a fact. He told him he'll retire before he ever plays for them again, but I'm not sure they're actually going to trade him. Miles Garrett said the same thing last year, and we know how that ended up. Garrett crossing the picket line, monster money, monster deal, lifetime Brown, and the sack record in 2025 on a terrible football team. That's the latest news from the NFL for now. When we come back, we're going to round out and wrap up the show with On This Day in Sports History, some MVFC football talk, and so much more. Whip around coverage, things you might have missed over the weekend, coming up next on this Monday edition of Overtime on your Sioux Falls Sports Leader.
Sporting matchups and coverage. We are ESPN 102.3 and AM 1000 KSOO, Sioux Falls Sports Leader.
Right back with you, set to round out and wrap up this Monday edition of Overtime. A reminder, we did hear from our second quarter winner of Burt's Boxes, Greg. We're still waiting to hear from Cade, S like Sam, and Haley, H like Henry. The big winners. Haley was our grand prize winner, the final score prognosticator with Burt's Boxes. Feel free to give me a call at the end of the show here in about 10 minutes, and we'll get you hooked up with the prize pack, hammer out some details, and get you hooked up with those tickets as well. Time now, though, on Monday, a little later than usual for us to look back on this day in sports history, but we're going to hit it anyway. Why not to look back on a Monday?
History repeats itself.
Little roller up along first, behind the bag, it gets through Buckner.
Well, sometimes.
Do you believe in miracles? Yes!
In the world of sports, there are moments that are fleeting.
And Barnes, that one high, pitch it deep.
And some that live forever.
In the end zone, it is caught for the win!
It's time for Burt to deliver those moments that happened on this day in sports history.
Well, we start back in 1895, where William Morgan presented a new sport, and he called it Mintonet. Mintonet to the world at Springfield College in Massachusetts. Later renamed into the much more likable, much more fun name of volleyball. Born on this day in 1895. In 1951, Major League Baseball's St. Louis Browns signed pitcher Satchel Paige at the ripe age of 45. And 20 years later, in 1971, Paige became the first Negro League player elected to the Baseball Hall of Fame. A lot more going on this day, but really a pretty light slate, all things considered. 2006, on this day in sports history, the great Al Michaels joined NBC for Sunday Night Football, broadcasting with the late, great John Madden. And just last year, 2025, in Super Bowl 59 from the Caesars Superdome in New Orleans, Philadelphia Eagles claim their second title in franchise history with a romp and a roll and a rumble against the Kansas City Chiefs, 40-22, winning over the two-time defending champion Chiefs. Your MVP last year was Philadelphia quarterback Jalen Hurts. Other things to get to on this day in sports history, how about some birthdays? 1952 birthday for Danny White, American College Football Hall of Fame quarterback, played and won Super Bowl XII, second-team All-Pro and a Pro Bowler in 1982 with the Dallas Cowboys, born on this day in Mesa, Arizona. Speaking of those Cowboys, Jimmy Smith, Jacksonville Jaguar wide receiver who did begin his career in Dallas, also celebrating a birthday, 1969, born in Detroit, Michigan. Other birthdays, also a 69 birthday on this February the 9th for Todd Light, American football quarterback and Super Bowl winner with the St. Louis Rams, born in the Marshall Islands on this day in 1969. Other birthdays, how about a punter to celebrate today? 1974, Brad Maynard's birthday today, American football punter with the Giants and Bears, born in Tipton, Indiana. Today is a big birthday for Vlad Guerrero Sr., born in 76, the Dominican Baseball Hall of Fame right fielder and designated hitter, a 9-time All-Star, MVP in 2004, born in Nassau, Dominican Republic in 1976. And speaking of those Eagles, the title winners last year, Saquon Barkley's birthday today, born in 1997, the NFL Offensive Rookie of the Year in 2018, and very, very accomplished player, born in the Bronx, New York in 1997 on this February the 9th. Final moments of the show to dive into right now. Let's see about some things you may have missed over the weekend. And we start with bad news from the NFL. We didn't dive into this earlier, but this news pretty darn troubling for a young pass rusher in Atlanta. Falcons rookie James Pierce Jr. allegedly crashed his vehicle into one being driven by WNBA player Ricky Jackson multiple times and struck a police officer with the vehicle while evading arrest, according to a report from the Miami-Dade County State Attorney's Office. Pierce was arrested on Saturday in Florida on 5 different felony charges, including aggravated battery with a deadly weapon, aggravated stalking, and aggravated battery of a law enforcement officer. Tremendously ugly news. You can view all the details, if you'd like, at ESPN.com. Well, one of the best stories of the Olympics in the lead-up was what Lindsey Vonn was doing. Then we got the tough news that she had an ACL tear and was going to give it a go anyway. And I told you on the show, how crazy is that? How cool is that? That she's given it a go despite that obvious, tremendous hurdle. And if you missed it over the weekend, things came crashing down in a hurry for Lindsey Vonn in a scary situation over the weekend. The fallout from Lindsey Vonn's devastating crash in the Olympic downhill on a severely injured knee prompted a key question. Should she have been allowed on a course that is dangerous even to perfectly healthy skiers? The resounding answer on social media was no. The answer from the skiing community remains yes. Vonn's teammate Keely Cashman saying today, people that don't know ski racing don't really understand what happened yesterday. She hooked her arm on the gate, which twisted her around. She was going probably 70 miles an hour, so that twists your body around. Vonn lost control within seconds of leaving the start house on Sunday, clipping the gate with her right shoulder and pinwheeling down the slope before ending up awkwardly on her back, skis crisscrossed below her, and screams ringing out as medical personnel arrived. She was taken to a clinic, airlifted in Cortina, then transferred to a larger hospital in Treviso, a 2-hour drive to the south. And Vonn, quote, underwent an orthopedic operation to stabilize a fracture reported in her left leg. A tremendously scary situation. And I know myself, like many, were touting this up and saying how cool is that she's giving it a go. And how amazing it was that, you know what, you made it to the Olympics. You've got confidence. Your coach has confidence. You've been cleared by the doctors. You can give it a try. And it's worth the squeeze. And it's not a black and white situation here. As much as people want to play hindsight 2020, she got really darn hurt. Career is over, likely. And say, look at me, I'm right. I know exactly what needs to go on. No, you don't, frankly. This is a bad situation, an ugly one, and one that might have been caused by her knee injury, or in the eyes of her teammates who do this for a living, who have been on that course on that day, this was the accident that happens from time to time, where you make contact with an object that throws your body off trajectory. And a brutally hard fall for Lindsey Vonn. All we can say out of this story to me personally is thoughts and prayers and a recovery for Lindsey Vonn, frankly, over the weekend. Tough situation in the early moments of the Milan Cortina Olympics. Other news to get to centered around those Minnesota Vikings. The Eagles have found a new offensive line coach. According to Tom Pelissero, they're going to hire former Viking offensive line coach Chris Cooper, whose contract was not renewed. 43-year-old spent the last 4 years in Minnesota. Former fifth-round pick of the Broncos in 2006, Cooper appeared in 90 games with 79 starts along the offensive line in Denver through 2013, has since worked for the Dolphins, Broncos, and Vikings, and now he will join former Minnesota quarterback Sean Mannion, who is now the OC in Philly, on his staff as the team's offensive line coach. Adam Gase is back in the NFL with a new home. The LA Chargers are reportedly adding Gase, who hasn't coached since 2020, to a new position. The official title has not yet been revealed. He's expected to be an offensive passing game coach of some kind, but that news, the latest from the NFL. And we wrap up the show today, final few minutes here, talking about the NFL contenders and pretenders and how wide open this whole thing is for next year. I do have a small bone to pick here in regards to next year's odds. And I know we always talk about this and it's so darn far away. But Seattle and the Rams are tied at plus 950. The Bills plus 1100. Eagles, Patriots in the top five. Ravens, Packers, Lions, Chargers, Chiefs in the top 10. Niners and Broncos horrifically undervalued in the top 12. Texans and then the Jags at 14. Keep an eye on that team. The Bears are undervalued at the 16th best odds, tied with the Bengals, by the way, for the 15th best odds in the NFL to win it all next year. Those are some undervalued teams, for sure, that come to mind for me. But the overvalued team here is the team that I banged the drum for all year long, and that's the LA Rams. I thought they were better than Seattle in the games in which they played in the regular season. Postseason game looked like Seattle all the way. But the Rams and the Seahawks have identical odds here, and one of these things feels not like the other. I love the Rams. I think they should be the second highest odds here, second best odds to win it all. But Seattle beat them two times out of three. The most recent two games this year, Seattle just won the Super Bowl. They have so many pieces back, and Seattle has way more cap space to work with coming up this offseason. So, yes, I think the defending champs as of 12 hours ago deserve to be the best odds for next year. I'm not splitting hairs here. It could be very minuscule, but to put them at the same spot here feels a little off base because Seattle's got $75 million in cap space. The Rams have 47, which is a lot. But another thing worth noting here and mentioning here is in season, you talk about the age of Matthew Stafford, MVP year, the age of Devontae Adams, had another strong season. Eventually, as we all know, Father Time undefeated, and he's going to come knocking and sniffing around Los Angeles. And maybe next year's the year. Maybe they take a step back by a game or two. I like Seattle as the front runner here, and I think that's earned and respected. I don't necessarily am ready to say, not necessarily ready to say, they're going to win it all next year. But I think equipment-wise, roster-wise, draft-wise, and everything else, free agents to be, I think Seattle's the team to beat. And I think generally we'll see that maybe unfold here in the weeks to come, a little tinkering of those odds. But for now, Seattle and the Rams are tied for the best odds to win it all next season. That's the Monday edition of the show. We've got a lot to continue breaking down with you throughout the week, including North Dakota State moving up finally. Been talking about this for years. Should they? Will they? Will a conference come calling? Well, they got the ping on the phone over the weekend, the Mountain West, and that's a pretty good fit for them and a conference they can win before too long. The teams that are in it right now are not world beaters. They lost Boise State, Colorado State, Fresno State, SDSU, San Diego State, and Utah State. North Dakota State will now join a new Mountain West lineup of the heavy hitters, Northern Illinois, UTEP, Air Force, Hawaii, Nevada, New Mexico, San Jose State, UNLV, and Wyoming. Respect to those schools, but the Bison fit right in that new conference. We'll talk to you tomorrow at 11 when the next edition of Overtime rolls around on ESPN Sioux Falls.